One Man's Family, winner of 47 national awards, a Carlton E. Morse creation. One Man's Family, now in its 27th year, is dedicated to the mothers and fathers of the younger generation and to their bewildering offspring. Chapter 27, Book 133 of the Barber Family Saga. Today, how to set a wedding date. In the second floor nursery at Joan Farnsworth's house, five doors up from the Barber family home, Father Barber is reading a bedtime story to his great-grandchildren.
So, Speedy Sammy Sebastian, the space monkey, shot out of the nose cone 700 miles above the Earth and went zinging down through space. Presently, he found the buckle, and there he was dangling under a billowing red parachute high above that inviting green jungle he had never expected to see again.
Mr. Barber, look, they're both sound asleep.
Eh? Oh, Zephyr, yes? Come in.
Their grandma Claudia's here. Let's step outside.
Yes, shh, quiet. Tiptoe. Yes, yes.
She's waiting down in the living room. She wants to take the children over to her house until after Mrs. Farnsworth's honeymoon.
Eh? Joan has set the wedding date? That's news to me.
Miss Lacey heard she did. If you want to go on down, I'll move Tina back to her own bed and tuck her in.
Yes, yes, thank you.
That rocket story sure is restful. They conk out every time they hear it.
Yes, it bores me a little, too.
Dad?
Come in, Claudia. Yes, yes. Joan should be back at any moment. We're over to the market. Raymond Borden will be here for dinner.
Yes, I know.
What's this about a wedding date?
Mary Lou tells me it's all set.
Mary Lou, eh? The nose for news.
She has a gift, all right.
In a dubious way. Probably turn out to be a paid gossip.
Let's hope not. I hear you saw that item about Pinky last night.
Scurrilous, and they call that journalism.
Still going to sue, Dad?
No, no. Jack points out that Pinky actually was engaged to Greta, and Hank is actually going with her now. You can't sue them for reporting facts.
I was thinking about that quote. It was so crude.
Yes?
They quoted Pinky as saying he had found Greta first and could be first again if he weren't engaged to marry a hotel.
Yes.
Do you suppose he actually said a thing like that?
Well, we asked him, but we couldn't get a direct reply.
Zephyrin, I'm back. Have you heard from Dr. Borden?
Not yet, ma'am, but your mother and grandfather are both in the living room.
Yes, yes. Here we are, Joan.
Well, hello, Mother. What a nice surprise. Hi, Grandfather.
Yes.
Joan, while you're away on your honeymoon, we'd like to keep the children with us.
Mary Lou says you set your wedding date.
Where in the world did she get such a story? Isn't it true?
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yes.
Mary Lou said she was walking home from the bus stop last evening and Ray gave her a lift.
Oh, really?
Don't cause trouble here.
I see. Well, I'll have to have a talk with him.
Then it won't be Friday?
Oh, my, do you realize what I have to do? And we have to figure out what his schedule is. Oh, thanks for your offer, though. When the time comes, I accept.
I would have offered our house, but we try to keep things quiet so Pinky can sleep till evening.
Oh, I know.
Thank goodness he's working. I'm willing to tiptoe and...
That's Ray.
I'll let him in, Miss Farnsworth. I'm right here.
Oh, thank you, Zephyrin.
Zephyrin likes him, too.
Hi there, Zephyrin.
Sure I am, Dr. Borden. We have company in the living room. I'll take your things.
Come on in, Ray.
Hey, am I late? Oh, hello.
Hi there.
Evening, Raymond.
Hope I haven't kept you from anything.
Oh, it doesn't matter. I've decided to turn down your offer. We'll eat here.
Mm-hmm. Madame Napoleon, I call her.
I'm sorry. Didn't mean to sound bossy.
She's lived alone too much. We'll change that day after tomorrow.
When?
Friday at 4.
Oh, I see. In the brave new world, men decide the wedding date.
Well, I thought you agreed. In fact, I've announced it.
In the papers?
I told Mary Lou. Won't that do it?
Ray, this is something we've got to discuss.
Yes, I'll run along now.
And I'll go with you. Nikki and I want the children while you and Joan are away.
Now, there's a mother-in-law. As good as she looks.
We'll let you know tonight, Mother.
Yes, the weatherman has promised fair weather over the weekend, if you decide on a garden wedding.
Thank you, sir.
Yes, I know where I can put my hands on 100 extra chairs.
Well, that's surely more than enough.
I'll let them out, Dr. Borden. I'm right here. You go back and make your plans.
We'll return in just a moment to One Man's Family.
Here's the story of a little farewell party to warm the cockles of your heart, as the Irish might say. Because of a bell and the generous spirit behind it all, the villagers were reluctant to see the United States Air Force sergeant leave their community for the last time. The vicar clasped his hand. You leave us with a wonderful inspiration. You have made us better villagers and made our village better, he said. This happened in Cassington, a picturesque hamlet of thatched cottages nestled in the rolling hills of England. The farewell was to Master Sergeant Jack Lyons of the United States Air Force. All 420 villagers turned out to present him with a leather-bound volume of the town's history, which each had signed. Why? Well, for 8 centuries, the history of that little hamlet has revolved about St. Peter's, the interesting Norman church on the village green, its tall spire a graceful landmark in the tidy countryside. When the ravages of Jack Frost cracked the church's ancient bell, it was almost a local calamity. The cost of recasting the bell was far beyond St. Peter's meager resources. Sergeant Lyons took interest in the situation and finally met the emergency with his movie camera. He started by taking color sequences of life in the village and then throughout the countryside until he had put together a 2-hour film. This he exhibited at a modest admission price to the same audiences whose homespun activities he had pictured. All this took 6 months, a lot of spare time to sacrifice for a man with a wife and 2 children. But in the end, Sergeant Lyons had the $1,400 needed to repair the bell. Soon it was pealing forth again from the spire of the old church that was so much a part of the villagers' lives. This and many other beneficial things that the sergeant did for the village was the reason for the heartwarming farewell. Sergeant Lyons saw nothing remarkable in what he did. "I just helped," he explained simply. "But he gave us all a thought to remember. We are Americans. As we go, so goes America."
The front door closes and the footsteps recede. The kitchen door closes behind Zeflin as Joan comes back into the living room where Ray is standing with his back to the fireplace. He looks at her quizzically.
"Now, before you say a word, I had a talk with Uncle Paul, and he agrees with you absolutely. I shouldn't let Ross or anything about him influence my decision."
"Our decision?"
"In this case, mine."
"Look, you're going to say I do, and I'm going to say I do. The decision is ours."
"All right, ours. Only I can't possibly be ready by day after tomorrow."
"Why not?"
"Well, in the first place, I want a wedding without tension. And I can't have the children ready to go to my mother's, not by day after tomorrow. And the fact that Friday is Ross's day to come and see them has nothing to do with it."
"Don't think so, ma'am."
"I know it, because I've been facing into all that. I really have, Ray. That's all I've thought about since Monday."
"So, when's our wedding?"
"Well, when is your last lecture in this series?"
"Friday at 10 a.m.
"Oh, I see. Well, then when do you start again?"
"A week from Monday."
"Oh. Well, when would be the next time you could get away for a honeymoon?"
"6 weeks from Monday."
"Oh, dear. End of March. That is a long time."
"Roughly from the age of the reptile to the first atomic bomb."
"But I simply can't be ready by Friday. I can't, Ray."
"Okay, Saturday, then."
"You see, this is what you get into when you marry a woman with children. I want to talk it all over with Johnny and Tina."
Look. Now, wait a minute. You're ahead of you, Joan. I never told you this, but the third time I called here, Johnny cornered me. He asked if I planned to stay all night, and I said, no, not tonight.
What?
And he said he wished he had a daddy around all the time. And then he laid it right on the line. He said, there's an extra bed up in Mom's bedroom.
The third time? Way back there?
Well, I thought it showed real trust and admiration. You aren't going to have to prepare them for anything, Joan. They measured me for a stepfather the first time they saw me. I think I passed."
"Think so, do you?"
"I know it. When they go by, they wink at me."
"Oh, Ray, they don't, really."
"Sure they do. Well, Johnny does. Tina can't quite make it, but she tries. Both eyes closed."
"Oh, see, I meant to tell you, the darndest thing happened Sunday. I was dressing for church, and I heard Tina in my bathroom with that little high voice saying, why, I am beautiful. I'm simply beautiful.
Yeah.
And I went in, and there she was, standing on my makeup chair, stark naked, putting my lipstick all around her face." "You think you can stand living with that sort of thing?"
"Yeah, starting Friday at 4.
"Oh, now, Ray."
"Because if we don't get married on Friday, then we can't have a honeymoon until the end of March. Too long. Can't wait."
"But there's a state law. There are tests and things, blood tests, and they have to go to a laboratory. And it always takes 3 days.
With a doctor in the family?"
"But you have to have a laboratory certificate."
"Oh, lady, if I can't get a laboratory certificate faster than that, I'm not the fellow you ought to marry."
"Oh.
Now, what's the matter?"
"All right, then, Saturday. But where? Grandfather's garden, if it's a nice day? Or if not, in their living room?"
"Why, at Father Barber's."
"Well, that's where we barbers always have our weddings."
"What about your own mother's house?"
"My mother's?"
"Well, I should think they'd be hurt if we didn't at least give them a shot at it. Of course, if it's too much trouble and the old gentleman and your grandmother really want to bother and can keep it simple, anything's all right with me."
"My mother's house. Well, that'd be an awful shock to Grandfather."
"Well, he'd get over it in the long run. Might even improve his disposition. How do you know?"
"I see."
"What?"
"So this is what it's going to be like to have a man around the house."
the Barbers in just a moment.
Do you know who said, "Only free peoples can hold their purpose and their honor steady to a common end, and only free peoples can prefer the interests of mankind to any narrow interest of their own"? Those words were written by America's scholar president, Woodrow Wilson. Wilson knew that only the citizens of a free country were capable of unselfish efforts that would better the lives of people all over the world. In countries where there is no freedom, it is impossible for the general public to work toward unselfish goals, for the rulers of slave states are never unselfish. The goal of the dictator is not the betterment of mankind. Only in a democracy can citizens work steadily toward a common and noble end. Remember the words of Woodrow Wilson. They are part of your American heritage. Only free peoples can work together in the interest of mankind.
While a barber walking down his driveway finds the overhead outdoor light shining down on his garden, he discovers a new row of jonquils about to burst into bloom, and he hurries into the house in considerable excitement.
Fanny! Fanny! Oh, Betty. Yes, yes, excuse me. I've got to make a telephone call. Excuse me.
Come over and hear the latest about Jerry Beecham.
Yes, yes, I will. I'll be there.
Hello?
Joan, there's a whole row, about 36 yellow jonquils. They're suddenly ready to bloom. The rains have done wonders to the garden. Have you set a date yet?
Yes, we have, Grandfather.
When? When? Joan, are you there?
Could you come over here and bring Grandmother with you? We have something to tell you, and I only hope it won't be too much of a shock.
Yeah, I'm on my way.
One Man's Family, which comes to you Monday through Friday, is written by Harlan Ware and directed by Carlton E. Morse. This program has been selected to be heard by our armed forces overseas through the worldwide facilities of the Armed Forces Radio Service. In Chapter 28, Book 133, Night Before the Wedding, Frank Barton speaking. One Man's Family, winner of 47 national awards, now in its 27th year, is a Carlton E. Morse production and comes to you from California.
One Man's Family has come to you through the worldwide facilities of the United States Armed Forces Radio and Television Service.